Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Breakpoint show. Glad to have you. It's an awesome day. Today actually is April 9th, 2024. So again, thank you for joining us. And I'd like to welcome our co-hosts, Chris Woodruff and Martin Baliao. Did I say that right, Martin? Baliao, see?
Perfect.
See, everyone should learn how to say Martin's name because he's very important. So
I always say by low or something like that. But by, how do you pronounce it again?
Baliao.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So for folks who don't know, Martin is also part Indonesian. That's why Chris pronounces his name that way. No, just kidding. But today we actually have an interesting topic. But, you know, before we jump into the topic, Chris, Martin, how you guys doing?
All good. I'm having good fun with some game development in the past couple of days, and it's really fun to be doing something completely different from what I usually do in terms of writing code and so on. So yeah, having good fun.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah, Chris.
Oh, I just got back from vacation. So here in the United States, there's a thing called spring break, where high school students have a week off. Usually around
high school students,
not me, but I do have one last high school student. My daughter's a senior in high school, so she graduates high school this year. And we went on spring break last week, and we went to Dominican Republic down in the, technically I think that's the Caribbean. And I am Irish. I have lots of Irish genes, which means that I am not built for the sun. I am allergic to the sun, and I am peeling in certain parts of my body. So it's itchy and it's not fun. But it was a great time. There was about 27 high school kids in our group. And the whole resort that we went to was basically all high school kids and families.
Sounds fun. So before we get into the topic, I just want to ask our listeners kindly, if you're watching us on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. That really helps us out, kind of gets our show out there to more people. So be sure to like that. If you're listening on your podcast provider of choice, again, please follow us there. Be super helpful for us. But let's get to the topic today. For folks who don't know, Chris Woodruff right now is writing an amazing book. Should I announce it, Chris, or do you want to announce the title? Because it's kind of a neat title, but I'd love to say
it. You can say it. Yeah. You'll say it better than I probably will. So
okay, I'll try to make this cinematic for the folks listening there. But it's called Beyond Boundaries: Networking Programming with C#12 and .NET 8. So it's pretty exciting. I think you've written at least the first three chapters, which Martin and I have read. But today's topic for the show is just network programming in general. You know, networking kind of underpins the modern programming era. I'm sure we can all remember a time where networking was just in its infancy. And today it's kind of like you really can't write a program without interacting with any kind of networking.
Exactly.
So it's really important to understand some of the fundamentals around networking. How, like, what .NET offers programmers in terms of networking, and, you know, talk to you guys about your experiences with network programming with C# and .NET. So, Chris, take it away. I mean,
sure.
What's your experience been with networking in general?
Oh, interesting stuff. I mean, we all remember Windows before it had any networking capabilities, where you had to, like, install some kind of computer network protocol. Like, who remembers Vines?
Mm-hmm.
Or what were the other ones? There was Cisco, or I don't know. There was back in like the Windows 3 and maybe 3.1 before Microsoft added TCP/IP stack into the Windows kernel or the Windows system. But yeah, most people, I mean, I will say that most people today probably have never worked with an operating system that didn't have network capabilities, which is good. I mean, as a kid, I had a standalone computer that I could type code into and do things on the computer. And looking back, it was a little boring. So having that network capability, and then I was in the stage where I remember in college, I remember this weird thing called Mosaic got into the Michigan State computer systems, and you could bring up a browser and go to web pages and use HTML. Like, all there was HTML. It was just everything was static pages back then. But so, and then looking today, wow, it's just exploded. I mean, with everything that we can do with networks and communications, and that's really what it is. It's not, when I really want people to understand that network programming is a way to communicate. And it's just some interesting stuff. It's getting, like, the book kind of in the beginning starts deep in the weeds, because I think everyone needs to know about sockets and async. They should know about async and await, that asynchronous programming, because you have to know that in network programming so you don't, like, stop the whole program waiting for something to come across a wire from potentially halfway around the world. And you have to know about multi-threading. And so the book kind of works its way up, and then you get into the fun stuff. Like, most people, you get an HTTP, you get an REST, you get in the GRPC.
GRPC.
GRPC. I'm sorry. So it's early in the morning here. I haven't had enough coffee, but and all the other kind of ways that you can build communication protocols, and I'm just a big geek when it comes to network protocols. I think they're interesting and very cool.
So, Martin, I have a question for you. Can you folks remember your first modem? Because I feel like we're all old enough to have like an external device attached to get on the internet. Can you remember the make and model of your first modem, and what was the speed of it?
So I think I had a US Robotics 28.8K modem that was connected on a serial connection, so no USB or whatever, serial connection on my Amiga 1200s at that time.
Yeah, which I remember.
Funnily enough, also did not have a TCP/IP stack, so every single time you would want to connect to the internet, you had to actually fire up the TCP/IP stack in RAM so that device could actually go onto the internet. So fun times.
Yeah, I remember. I think my first one was, I bought a $4,000 486 laptop that had a modem built in. And I want to say it was only like 2,400 baud, which was kind of fast back then. I think that was about the fastest that you could get on most copper, on most household in the United States, copper wire. It's come a long way, but I remember just being on CompuServe. I would jump into CompuServe and just talk to people and go into Usenet and talk to people. I actually met Marvin Minsky who's like the godfather of AI. He's also had some negative stuff about him. We won't bring all that up, but yeah, he and I chatted about a book he wrote, like a science fiction book he wrote, and he actually gave me a chapter that wasn't released in the book. It was like the last, like a last chapter. And since then, with the Kindle version of that book, they've released the chapter. But this was around 99 or 2000 that I met him, or maybe it was 98. It was pretty early, but he goes, "Hey, do you want this chapter?" And we never released it. We never published it. You can have it to read it because you like the book so much.
That's awesome.
But
you know, these kids, they don't know how good they have it with speeds. Oh. But well, anyways,
we had it pretty good. Do you guys remember Usenet? I know we're going off in the woods and we can talk. There were some interesting Usenet groups like Chrome the Moon. Do you remember Chrome the Moon? Chrome.the.moon.
Maybe folks listening know. Maybe they could leave their experiences in the comments, but I've not experienced Chrome the Moon. Marsh shaking his head. He's shaking his head too.
No. Yeah. See, that's why I don't have very much hair and my beard is gray. I kind of remember all that stuff. And it was fun. But there's fun stuff today. It's interesting. Like Reddit is a really cool thing. But let's get back into networking programming. So
Martin had a thought before I rudely interrupted him. Go ahead, Martin.
No, I was just going to mention, I think Khalid, you and I both were from the same year. And I think we were kind of at the end of the golden years of when the entire internet and everything around that started. So I guess a lot of people from our age have been doing web hosting on the site while they were a student. I know I have, for example, and have been playing with all of those protocols that were emerging at the time and that we nowadays take for granted. So I will say thank you, Chris, for adding a chapter to the book that talks about some of the basics of network programming.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tried to do, I'm looking at the chapter list. So there is an overview of network programming and there's a fundamentals where I try to get into kind of where things came and talking about protocols and talking about how things like outside of .NET. So the first two chapters has nothing to do with C# and .NET. It really has to do with getting a foundation so that we can build upon that. And that's what each chapter, I hope, builds on the next one until we get to chapter 9. You start getting into things like TCP/IP sockets, and then you go UDP sockets and web sockets, and then you get an HTTP. And so it kind of, and some of these stuff that don't get really used a whole lot anymore, but I think it's still important to know, like how many people actually have programmed like professionally and for production work, a TCP/IP socket. I haven't. So I'm to be honest, I'm kind of teaching myself because I remember doing that in college in C and C++, but I haven't done it professionally in C#. So it's good for me because I'm teaching myself stuff. But then when we get down to MQTT, so that's for IoT. And then you have like the webhooks and you have message queuing. And then we all know gRPC. Thanks, Khalid. And then you get into like Rust. You get into like REST and that type of stuff using HTTP. That's the stuff that we're... kind of most people at that level are working with professionally. They're not digging too much down into the basics like HTTP, like TCP/IP. I mean, so So, but I think you still need to know that stuff. And it's, and if you don't want to learn it, you can skip it. And there's certain chapters you can skip and, or move around in the different stuff.
Well, I will say it is quite fun to be at that low level as well. So I mentioned the hosting and everything when I was a student. So the way you would go out and check for domain name availability, for example, would be over either a Whois server, or in a couple of countries, they had a different system where you would connect on a socket, where you would essentially send the domain name and they would give you back a true or false with a custom protocol running on UDP or TCP. So definitely fun times, but I'm so happy that for many of the things we built today, we have HTTP, gRPC, GraphQL, and all of the more high-level things where you can just say, I have data on one side, bring it to the other side, and handle everything in between.
And it's nice today not having to worry about partial streams of data. Like I have already a fix coming for an update coming for chapter 3. You guys know Stephen Cleary, right? He's a speaker here in the United States, and he sent me this thing going, well, your section on like partial network payloads, you need to expand that a little bit more and use, there's a class in .NET called the decoder. And it's interesting. So the decoder is for UTC-8 encoded data coming across the network. And if you only get a partial, or until you can actually start getting that, getting from the network buffer all this content. But sometimes in the first four, I'm going to get really geeky, the first four bytes of a payload should give you the length of the entire length of that payload coming across the wire. And if you really get down deep and want to do things on your own, you can start using kind of a loop to get that content and check to see if you've reached the end through this decoder object by using the knowledge that you got from the first four bytes in your network payload. So you can get way down into the weeds, but .NET has made it really simple, but they've still allowed you to do things by hand. So if you really want that performance and have a specialized need, it's all there for you in .NET and using C#. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that too, because one of like the core pillars of ASP.NET Core now is Kestrel, and Kestrel was kind of built from the ground up using a lot of .NET primitives like TCP listeners and things like that. And it kind of started out as kind of like a debugging tool. And now it is essentially like the main server/host for a lot of ASP.NET Core applications, due to the fact that now you can cross-platform host your ASP.NET Core applications. So, and I've actually written a few blog posts about other web servers written by folks in the .NET community that are available on NuGet. So that's always interesting. It's always interesting. I also watched a recent Computer File YouTube video where someone built an HTTP server from scratch in Rust. And it was only really like 27 lines of code to build build your own HTTP server. Obviously it was not secure. I would not recommend rolling your own HTTP server specifically for production, but the protocol itself is very, very simple. It's text-based, and you could write it, you know, within an hour, even if you don't have that like knowledge to do so. So it's pretty easy. But I was going to ask both of you guys, like, what do you think in terms of protocols, networking protocols, which one do you think was most influential in terms of bringing us to where we are today? And which one do you see kind of being the most influential, say, in the next 5 years or decade?
I'll let Martin start. So
that's a question where I would actually say it's probably the good old protocols that are there. Definitely TCP and IP, because that's the foundation of communication for many of the things we do today. Of the more high level protocols, I would say everything that is HTTP based. And I know HTTP has been evolving, but it's still very much backwards compatible. There's different versions out there, servers support different versions. And a lot of what we do today with APIs, with retrieving information from the internet and all of that, I think is powered by HTTP. And for a protocol that is as old as HTTP is, I'm still amazed every once in a while that that the internet works the way it does and as good as it does right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think everything changed when TCP/IP came out of ARPANET. And it's interesting what TCPI gives you. It gives you that redundancy, error helps out with errors. Because if you remember why ARPANET came and what their mission was one of their mission was, if a nuclear strike hit the United States or hit someplace and took out part of the network, that the network was resilient enough to be able to route around that that outage. And so really, because of that, we have this really, really interesting protocol that you don't know where your packets have been. Sounds kind of creepy, but you don't really know. When you send something from your browser, say you send back an image to be uploaded to, or a video, like this video will get uploaded to YouTube. Well, all that video doesn't go straight as one big blob over to YouTube. It gets broken up. TCP/IP breaks it up into packets and it gets sent out, and they have a ID or some type of like identifier, but they also have a coded order for that packet. And the interesting thing is packets show up at where they're supposed to. They might not be in the order. They might not be received in the order that they were sent, because a packet may have gone all the way to South America and came back up, and another one may have just gone across North America. And you don't know because of TCP/IP. There's no guarantee that those packets will come in order on the other side. So that's the interesting thing that I don't think most people, like most developers today, may not understand stuff like that TCP/IP gives you or gave you back then. The other interesting protocol, and I'm going to add a chapter or add something when the entire book is done. It's a new protocol called QUIC, QUIC. And that's a really cool one. Might replace TCP/IP in the future. So it's an interesting, I don't know tons about it, but if you guys know more about it, Martin, the machine may know about it. So I'll hand it over to Martin.
I mean, Martin runs on QUIC. Yeah. He runs on it.
Yeah,
so
sometimes, yeah. No, it is a really interesting protocol, in that TCP/IP, while it's super cool in terms of making sure that packets actually arrive where they should be and can cross over different network paths and everything, they're also not super efficient because you have a couple of handshakes that are happening and a couple of things where at the protocol level, TCP has to say, okay, I received this package. I didn't get this one. Can you please resend? And there's a couple of, there's quite a bit of overhead in that communication. Whereas UDP, which is used for streaming video and everything, actually the recording we are doing right now is probably also running over UDP, where the camera is just flowing over the internet. And if there's a packet that gets lost, then so be it. There will be maybe half a frame less in the recorded video. But UDP is much more efficient in that there's no retransmission or anything. It just flows and that's it. Downside of that is that it's not reliable. Now, QUIC is more interesting because QUIC is a reliability layer on top of UDP, where this streaming scenario of not having the network handle the retransmission and everything is replaced by something in that QUIC protocol, which apparently is much more efficient. And I think even HTTP/3 is based on that. So a lot of the websites that you might be visiting right now might be UDP based and no longer use TCP/IP.
Wow, that's a really good summary of QUIC. Thanks, Martin. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm curious about the evolution of just kind of networking in general and how we both program for it and how we as just users of technology like consume it. Chris, you have two potential protocols here that are used both by people directly and also used by people indirectly. WebRTC is like a video protocol that's used in browsers to kind of stream video. And with streaming services, we have like Netflix, Disney Plus. Maybe we'll get sponsored by them. I could throw some more streaming services.
Talk to me. Yeah.
use our code in the comments. No, yeah. I don't know. I'm just joking. But you know, video accounts for a lot of the traffic on the internet at this point. I swear I remember seeing Netflix account for 30% of internet traffic.
Yeah. Crazy at one point, it was like almost a third of all internet traffic was Netflix.
So video is really a big, you know, part of the future of the web. But another protocol you have here is MQTT. Can you describe kind of what MQTT is and like where people may run into MQTT?
So I'm going to play ignorant. I'm going to be totally honest. I do not know much about MQTT. I added that in there because I want to learn it myself and add it to the book. I know it's for those edge devices that are small. So imagine like sensors on maybe ocean liners or sensors on like oil rigs or just sensors in like factories. So I think a lot of it is they have to be real quick and they have to be real time. So as far as I know, MQTT is like a real-time, reliable protocol that is almost ubiquitous to kind of those small little sensors that are all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it. So that is my MQTT knowledge at this point. So.
Well, I am on the official site, so I can read it for folks who are interested. So the official site says MQTT is an OASIS standard messaging protocol for the Internet of Things. It is designed as an extremely lightweight pub/sub messaging transport that is ideal for connecting remote devices with a small code footprint and minimal network bandwidth. MQTT today is used in a wide variety of industries such as automotive, manufacturing, telecommunications, oil and gas, etc. It's funny that they in their description they just etc.
etc. etc. Yeah. So it it will be a, I think IoT has had that big way, that big surge of interest, and now it's kind of losing some of that interest, but I still think that that IoT has a huge place, mm-hmm. and I think it still has a huge place with .NET and C#, since we can put .NET on like Raspberry Pis and small little single board chips and computers that can basically exist anywhere at mm-hmm. this point. So,
yeah, I think having seen this MQTT website now, it's interesting to see that there's so many protocols out there. Even today, people invest new protocols and everything because you have that network layer, you have a communication layer that connects one side to the other. Yes, you have HTTP and other protocols that already exist that you can use in your existing applications or any new application you are building. But every once in a while, there is going to be this scenario where you need something else or something more, and then other protocols emerge. I think a really nice example there is also in what we do at JetBrains. So our Rider IDE is built in Java and .NET and essentially runs two processes that have to communicate. And I know when that first was built, there was an experiment to also use HTTP and a couple of other protocols to make those two sites talk to each other. And in the end, I believe the team went with a custom protocol with custom serialization and everything just to make that more efficient for that specific use case.
Well, and you open sourced. And you open source that protocol.
Yeah, that's also
right?
Open source. Yeah, correct. But it's really cool to see that everyone has different needs, and there's a lot of protocols that will fit most of the applications, but still there is a need. And again, thank you there for writing the book and having a topic on raw sockets and everything that is going on at the low level, because every once in a while you might run into something like that where you have to build your own.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. And you know, there's interesting ones. Like, you know, I'm a big Rust fan, but I know people that love gRPC, and the G stands for Google because they created it. They basically said, oh, let's just use the old RPC. Let's just throw stuff across the wire, and we have our own kind of way of dealing with it. And people picked it up, and you know what? People that use gRPC are awesome. The other one is that's not in here is what's the Q? Oh, the it's basically what Office 365 their API is based on, WebQ.
Oh, I've never heard of that. Have you heard of that, Martin?
I don't know. Maybe I'll edit. I probably won't edit it out. I'm too lazy. But
no, it's the heat stroke, Chris.
It's the heat stroke. But there are things. I mean, I didn't put everything in here, just because you could go on forever with protocols, and like it would be cool to add a chapter maybe in the future saying like how do you develop your own protocol, like because most people don't really understand what a protocol is either. A protocol is just a guidance, is basically, think of it as an interface, and you have to implement based on the interface. And HTTP is a perfect example. Everyone has their own implementation of HTTP. Microsoft does, Apple does, and any other iOS, like Linux, has their own implementation for HTTP. Now, they all behave correctly, and they all communicate fine between two HTTP servers or endpoints because of that protocol kind of locks them into that contract, and they have to adhere to the contract. Just like, I mean, I didn't add my favorite protocol in here, which is OData, but maybe in the future I'll do OData added in here. But yeah. So there's lots of different stuff. So I would love to get feedback from people. If you read the book or read the chapters, it is sitting on GitHub. So you can add, I have a place where you can submit bugs or feedback. So, but I do want it because I'm going to keep this as a living. One of the reasons why I did the book like this is I want to keep it alive and keep it updated. And I'm going to add a new page in here. Over last week on spring break, I said, I need in books that get updated, there's and I cannot remember the word that it's kind of like updates, but it's a different word. And I should have remembered the word coming into this podcast recording, but
it's a show, Chris. It's a show.
It's a show. Show. Yeah, on the show. But I will have a page to say, hey, I updated chapter 3 with this feedback, and I'll even credit the person who gave me the feedback to thank them for that. So
that's cool.
Yeah. So on that note, I think we're coming up on time. Do you folks have any kind of last thoughts about, you know, networking? You know, we talked about how .NET has built-in intrinsics that make networking just a joy to work with inside of the .NET stack. Like Chris, you mentioned Rust. You know, have you tried network programming in other languages? I know Martin's a big Java person, so maybe you can give us some interesting comparisons between Java and .NET. And just kind of general advice, maybe debugging tips when the network, you know, is unreliable. What are some last thoughts you guys have?
I think in terms of last thoughts, I will give one debugging tip that is half serious, half joking, but also half serious. if something fails in the network, it's probably DNS.
Yeah. That's a lot of halves, Martin. That's like one too many halves.
Yeah. Yeah. DNS. Yeah. And DNS is domain name servers, and they're all over the place. And they basically make sure that we don't have to use IP addresses everywhere. So yeah. And usually if something goes bad, it's either DNS is bad that needs to be kind of flushed out and redone, or nasty certificates. So that's the other thing. And you have to remember that back in the day, the internet wasn't encrypted. I mean, I remember when you just basically got static files that anyone could peek in and look at if they could grab all those packets going across TCP/IP. But now we have encryption. And the other thing is, if something goes haywire, it's usually a certificate that has expired. So that's the other thing. It's always something simple. It's never anything too complex when it comes to network programming. But it can be tough to identify, because you have to remember you're receiving stuff from someplace else, and you don't have any control over what's coming across a wire to you sometimes. So testing all the edge cases can be interesting. And so when I get to that point, I know a little bit about testing networking code and stuff, but it's going to be interesting to really dig in and find those testing mechanisms, maybe from experts to find those edge cases to really harden your network code.
Yeah, so
I'd love to read that chapter, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean,
that
there's
an interesting, how do you test the network that is faulty or something that is happening on the wire where you have no control or no direct control? You can probably do some simulation with the way some of the abstractions work in terms of streams and everything, but still that's a simulation. It's probably not going to resemble
the behavior of an actual. And how do you share that information with the user? I mean, a typical user doesn't care. So we get it all the time. When your video starts buffering, that's a network issue. That's a latency issue. And that's the other thing you have to worry about is latency. Like, you can get a whole bunch of packets coming in and then they can stop or trickle in really slow. You don't really know what you're going to get, when you're going to get it.
All right. Okay, on that note, I think we've hit our time. I want to thank you guys, Chris, Martin. Thank you for being a great co-host. We're going to leave a link to Chris's book in the show notes. So if you're interested in both reading it or, reviewing it and giving feedback, I think, Chris, you would appreciate that, correct?
I would. Yeah, I would. I love feedback. So, and thank you for hosting this week. So I appreciate it.
So on that note, again, thank you to our listeners. I just want to remind folks, please like and subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, it helps us out. If you're listening to this podcast for the first time, be sure to follow us on your podcast provider of choice. That really helps us out. And again, thank you again for listening. This has been another episode of Breakpoint Show, and we'll catch you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.